Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about the latest federal budget deal that was passed by both parties in Washington, because it really shows how things work in America and in Israel. First of all, the deal between the Democrats and the Rhino Republicans, Congressman Paul Ryan and Speaker John Boehner, two Rhino left-wing establishment phonies. This deal increases spending, increases taxes, increases bureaucracy, and fully funds Obamacare. That's the great deal that the Republican leaders in Congress worked out with the Democrats. What a farce. You see, the establishment controls both political parties. The establishment are several dozen multinational billionaire companies. You have multinational billionaire families who are worth billions of dollars and who spread their influence around with their money and who own the news media in the United States. And they, together with the multinational multi-billion dollar corporations that they control, absolutely choke off any dissent and control the entire political agenda in both political parties. And so, as soon as conservative activists and conservative organizations, the Tea Party and other conservative groups, attacked this disastrous federal budget deal, Speaker John Boehner right away angrily attacked the conservatives. He called them all types of names and he started screaming at the conservatives. And the left-wing news media loved it. And now the left-wing news media loves Speaker John Boehner. Now he's reasonable, he's moderate, he's a good leader, he's courageous. Why? Because he sides with multi-billion dollar corporate traitors who are destroying America, Israel, and the West. He sides with them against the American people. And so he suddenly becomes a wonderful leader. And the entire establishment media parrots the line that he's a wonderful leader and he's finally showing these Tea Party fanatics and these right-wing extremists, he's finally showing them what a real leader is all about. And by the way, that commentary of how wonderful it is that the conservatives are being attacked by Republican leaders, how wonderful that is, that's not just from CBS, ABC, NBC, PBS, CNN and the other left-wing Bolshevik media. It's also from the phony right, which is Fox News and the Wall Street Journal. They're also part of this. They're also part and parcel of the establishment. Now, just to give you an illustration, by the way, about how bad this deal is, the one tiny little glimmer of progress that we had on budget issues and on government funding issues was something called the sequester. The parties agreed, both political parties agreed to something called the sequester, where they agree that they're going to make certain cuts in the increase in federal spending. By the way, there are no cuts to spending anywhere. No one is cutting any spending anywhere. Unfortunately, they should cut spending, and they should cut spending deeply. But no spending is ever being cut in Washington. The sequester was just cutting the rate of increase in federal spending. The rate of increase was being cut by this, by what was called the sequester. So it was a tiny little glimmer of movement in the right direction. Scaling back the rate of increase. That's what the sequester was. And I'm not going to go into too much detail about it. It was one tiny little step in the right direction. Now even that has been handed back to the Democrats and eliminated in this latest budget deal, because the Republican establishment animals in Washington were never happy with the sequester either. The Republican establishment animals in Washington want to increase spending just as much as the Democrats. They're as much a part of big Bolshevik government as the Democrats are. I mean, the person who proposed the internet tax was Senator Mike Enzi from Wyoming, a so-called conservative Republican. He proposed taxing everything on the internet. Everything that moves on the internet, he wants to drastically tax. That's the so-called conservative. The political parties in Washington are like twiddly-dee and twiddly-dum when it comes to stealing the money of American taxpayers. They both want amnesty for illegal aliens. They both want America to be invaded and taken over by third world banana republic illegal aliens that will demographically destroy America forever. Both parties support that. The Democrats support that because they'll be in power forever if that happens. All of America becomes like California. All of America becomes majority non-white, majority third world, and those people vote overwhelmingly Democrat. So the Democrats will be in power forever. It'll be like New York, Massachusetts, California. The whole country will become like New York, Massachusetts, California, overwhelmingly, hopelessly left-wing Democrat. That will be the whole country. And so they want amnesty for illegal aliens. And the Republicans, even though they'd be voted out of office, even though it guarantees that the Democrats will and the left will forever be in power, they support amnesty anyway. Why? Because big business wants cheap labor. Big business wants people that they could pay lower wages to. And so they want tens of millions of third world illegal aliens to come flooding into this country from Muslim countries and from Africa and from godforsaken hellholes. They want it too. Because they figure we're going to pay less on labor costs. They don't care what happens to this country in the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. The only thing they're thinking of is, are we going to make more profit next year or the year after? What's our bottom line going to look like? How much extra profit is our corporation going to make in the next year or the year after? These greedy, evil, despicable, multinational corporate billionaires are sucking the blood out of this country, and they always have been. And you know, you have groups like Occupy Wall Street and groups on the left and phonies like Elizabeth Warren and others who, and including Barack Hussein Obama, who claim to run against the billionaires and they claim to be against the rich when they're running in the elections, but it's all a lie. They are 100% in the hip pocket of these wealthy billionaires. They work together with them to impose socialism. And the reason the billionaires are not capitalists. The billionaires want socialism. The reason they want socialism is because under a socialist system, there is no competition. And the one thing they fear is competition. They don't want new upstart companies. They don't want free enterprise. They don't want a free market. They want to monopolize and control the market. So they have what's called monopoly capitalism, which is in effect socialism. That is what they support. That's what they want. That's what they push for. That's what they lobby for. And that's why they support both political parties. That's why most of the corporate billionaires in 2008 backed Barack Hussein Obama when he ran for president. That's why the corporate billionaires that own the news media have fanatically supported Obama and his presidency. Now, you got these groups on the left. They claim they're fighting against the 1%. All a lie. They're fighting against the 1% and they're funded by George Soros, who's worth $20 billion, because they're fighting against the 1%. I mean, give me a break. And you have the same exact situation in the state of Israel. A handful of billionaire families control everything in Israel. They control the political parties. They own the news media. They control all the big corporations. They employ the majority of the Israeli people. They control and own most of the shares on the Bursa. The Bursa is the stock market in Tel Aviv. The same exact situation. And God help anyone who goes against them and challenges them. That's the end. You challenge them, you're finished. We had one leader in Israel. Harab Meir Kahana Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo. Moreinu V'Rabbeinu, our teacher and our rabbi. He stood up against them and look what happened. The people were waking up because of him. He was waking the people up. And so they banned him. And they created a situation where eventually he was murdered. And in America, we recently saw a leader, a Gentile leader, doing what Rabbi Kahana was trying to do for Israel, trying to do the same thing in America, Ted Cruz. He started organizing the Tea Party groups and the conservative groups and grassroots activists and pushing them to force the Republican House and to force Republicans, not to vote for Obamacare, not to keep funding Obamacare. Because, you know, the Republicans have been pulling this fast one. They've been pulling this little game on their constituents and on their base. They've been saying, oh, we're against Obamacare. We voted against it. Every single Republican voted against it. Yeah, they voted against the original bill. But they've been voting to fund it ever since. They have never, never defunded it. They control the House. And the House passes full funding for Obamacare every single year. That's opposing Obamacare. So Ted Cruz called them on that and said, let's defund Obamacare. Yes, it's true that the Democrats control the Senate. Yes, it's true that Barack Hussein Obama unfortunately pollutes the Oval Office and is President of the United States. That's true. So we're not going to repeal Obamacare as long as the Muslim Jew hater Barack Hussein Obama is in the White House and as long as the Bolshevik Democrats control the Senate. That's true. We're not going to repeal it. But that doesn't mean we can't defund it. It can only be funded if the Republicans in the House vote to fund it. Every year, the Republicans in the House fund Obamacare. And so he said, let's defund it. And then there was a government shutdown, which he did not cause. Obama and the establishment hacks, opportunists, and political prostitutes in both parties, they caused the government shutdown because they refused to compromise and refused to in any way do anything about the horror that Obamacare is for the American people. And so Ted Cruz merely got up and made a speech for 21 hours in the U.S. Senate, and they blamed him for the shutdown of the government. That's absurd. He was not responsible. And on the contrary, it's his political enemies who are responsible. But the news media controls the narrative. And the news media has repeated over and over again, including the Republicans in the media, including Fox, including the Wall Street Journal, including the so-called Republican political consultants and experts, and columnists like George Will, who supports every left-wing thing under the sun and then calls himself a conservative. George Will, who supported Obama for president in 2008, who did everything in his commentaries to help elect Obama in 2008, and who now strongly supports the agreement with Iran to allow Iran to build nuclear bombs, and then he calls himself a conservative. Or Charles Krauthammer, the self-hating Jew, who's constantly on every program on Fox giving scholarly advice as if he's the big expert on everything. This is Charles Krauthammer worked in the political campaign of Walter Mondale, the left-wing Democrat who ran against President Reagan. When President Reagan ran for re-election in 1984, his Democrat opponent was Walter Mondale. Guess who worked for Walter Mondale's campaign? Guess who was on Walter Mondale's staff? Charles Krauthammer, the conservative, who now speaks about Ronald Reagan and conservatism. He speaks about Ronald Reagan and conservatism. He did everything he could to defeat Reagan for re-election in 1984. He was on the staff of the Democrat who ran against Reagan for president in 1984. He was a left-wing Democrat. Now he says he's changed. Yeah, sure. The fact is these sellouts, these establishment cronies and phonies, are responsible for the predicament we're in. And Ted Cruz tried to stand up to them. And now everybody's against Ted Cruz. Everyone in politics and everyone in the establishment, in both parties, and everyone in the news media, all the commentators on Fox, oh, didn't work in the shutdown and he's responsible and hopefully he learned his lesson. Oh, please. If there's something that didn't work, it was not what Ted Cruz tried to do. If there's one thing that didn't work, and that hasn't worked for decades, it's Republicans aping all of the policies of the Democrats. We had two Bushes in the White House, Yimach Shmam V'Zichram Shem Reshayim Yirkav, two traitors, George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush and George A.B.C. Bush, or whatever their names are, the father and the son, Yimach Shmam. Those two pigs in the White House were Bush the father was president for 4 years, Bush the son for 8 years. Those two pigs drastically increased government spending, increased taxes, increased regulation, gave us all types of new federal government programs. You might as well have had Democrats in the White House. Pressured Israel not to strike Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. Yes, the Bushes did that. Israel in 2008 was ready to strike. And Bush told them not to and pressured them not to. Vice President Dick Cheney wanted to give Israel the green light to strike, but George W. Bush, that coward, that wimp, that moron, he's a moron, he was a moron. That the left was right about. He is and was a moron. He right away pressured Israel not to strike. That's what we had in the White House. The stock market collapsed. You remember the end of his administration? Stock market collapsed. The economy went in the tank. Huge recession. Massive government spending. Wars in Iraq. A war in Iraq that made no sense at all while Iran is building nuclear bombs. He's making a war against Iraq. Just because he and his family have this personal grudge against Saddam Hussein. So thousands of Americans are killed in Iraq for nothing. It's Saddam Hussein's government is replaced with a pro-Iranian Iraqi regime. Hundreds of billions of dollars wasted. Thousands of Americans killed. Nothing, absolutely nothing accomplished. And the American people are so sick and weary of anything having to do with military involvement now that they don't even want to do airstrikes against Iran's nuclear bomb-making program because of this. That's the great accomplishment of Bush. And he leads to the election of someone who's even worse. No question that Barack Hussein Obama is even worse. He's even worse than the establishment Republicans. That's true. But the establishment Republicans do such a terrible job, it is only a matter of time before they bring into power people like Barack Hussein Obama. They're destroying the country as well. The difference between the establishment Republicans and the Democrats is that one is driving us off a cliff. They're driving the car and driving and driving, and we're going to be driven off a cliff. But the Democrats are driving 65 miles an hour within the speed limit. And the Republicans, rather, are driving 65 miles an hour within the speed limit until we're driven off the cliff. The Democrats are driving 85 or 90 miles an hour. They're just driving a little faster off the cliff. That's the big difference. They're both driving off the cliff. They're both committing national suicide for the United States. They both support amnesty. Remember, Bush always supported amnesty. All the Bush Republicans all support amnesty. Now, all the Republican candidates for president came out for amnesty. Paul Ryan came out for amnesty. Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, came out for amnesty. Chris Christie naturally supports amnesty. You know, Chris Abdullah Christie, the Muslim governor of New Jersey, naturally, he supports amnesty, of course. I mean, it's just, all of them support amnesty. The only one who's against it is Ted Cruz. The only one who's against funding Obamacare is Ted Cruz. The only one who goes against the establishment is Ted Cruz. So he's the one guy that they all can't stand. And that's why we're supporting him. Now, is it possible we're going to wind up being disappointed by him too? Anything is possible. Look, we were disappointed by what he did with Nelson Mandela. He went to Nelson Mandela's funeral. It was terrible. And he praised Nelson Mandela. I can't believe that he did that. I mean, he praised someone who supported Fidel Castro when Fidel Castro tortured his father. His father was tortured by Fidel Castro. And Nelson Mandela was a communist supporter, a staunch communist supporter of the Castro regime in Cuba. And he's praising this black Nazi monster? Disappointing. Disappointing. But with the exception of this particular issue of what he did with Nelson Mandela, so far on the other issues, he's been pretty good. If he really disappoints us big time on future issues, then we'll have to take a look at this again. But right now, he seems to be the one anti-establishment candidate who seems to be reliably standing up for what is right. And that's good for America, and would be good for Israel. He'd be setting an example for Israel. Because we need someone like that in Israel. I want to be that type of person in Israel if they'd let me go there. This is what our battle is all about. And so, what's the answer? Both parties controlled by the establishment. In Israel, the parties are controlled by the establishment. What's the answer? The answer has always been a mass movement of the people against the establishment. The people. The American people. Against the establishment in the United States, and the Jewish people against the establishment in Israel. That's what Rabbi Kahana was trying to do. That's what Ted Cruz was trying to do in the debate we had this past fall over the budget, to try to arouse grassroots individuals to stand up against these multinational corporate cutthroat beasts who pretend, some of them pretend to be conservatives, some of them pretend to be Republicans, or in Israel they call themselves Likud. They in the end, they carry out the same policies as the left. We have to have a mass movement of truly principled, honest, sincere, God-fearing people, idealistic people. Now, I know they're going to say, and we're going to have people going to say, oh, idealistic. You see, you're unrealistic. Idealistic is not unrealistic. The whole message of Judaism is to change the world and make the world idealistic, to make the world believe in principles and ideals, to make the world stand up for what's right against the odds, to be a voice of morality and conscience and truth. That's the whole purpose. That's what Judaism is all about. To be a moral compass. To stand up for what's true and to stand up for what God demands that we do in this world. We have to build a mass movement that believes in that and that is loyal to those concepts and to those principles. We have to build a mass movement like that. That's the only answer. I know that if we could reach enough people on a regular basis, we'd be able to do that in Israel. That I know for sure. I am certain of it, that we'd be able to build a mass movement in Israel if we could only reach enough people on a regular basis. I believe that the same thing could happen in the United States. I still think it could happen in the United States. That's why we were hoping that Ted Cruz maybe would start something like that here. You know, it did happen once in America successfully. Ronald Reagan did successfully take on the establishment and beat them when he ran for the nomination in 1980. He beat the Republican establishment. That's the last time you had a candidate running against the Republican establishment and beating them in the United States. In Israel, that's never happened. No one has beaten the establishment yet. Rabbi Kahana, though, came close. If only he had had enough funds when he was banned, he would have been able to overcome that as well. He would have been able to overcome the ban, and we would have, and history would have been very, very different. We'd have a very different world today, a much better world. We've got to fight that good battle. That's what we're here for. I know that the odds are against us and that we're fighting against all types of very powerful people. I understand that. We all understand that. But we also know that the Bible promises us, the Torah promises us, and the Nevi'im, the prophets, promise us that they will come when the Jewish people will return and the Jewish people will stand up for principle and will become idealistic again. Though that day will yet come. I don't know if it'll happen in my lifetime. I don't know if it'll happen in the lifetime of the members of our great forum. I don't know. I don't know when it'll happen. It will happen someday. When it will happen, I can't tell you. I'm not a prophet. And so I can't tell you, but it will happen eventually because the people who are prophets in the Bible and in the Torah promised us that it will happen. We are trying to pave the road for that. We've got to have a movement that paves the road for that, that prepares the way for that. And we've got to aspire to try to do it ourselves if we can. If we can't, at the very least, we've got to pave the road for people in the future to do it. So the role we're playing is very important. We can't be silent, and we have to wake people up, and we have to do everything we can to save America, Israel, and Western civilization from the evil establishment. Our battle to save Israel, very difficult battle. Very difficult battle. Israel's in a lot of trouble. But again, we're not allowed to be silent. If we wake enough people up, we can still turn the tide, God willing. And so, help us. Get involved with us. Help us. I think you know how hard we're trying. I think you know that our message is a message of truth. Help us. When you see us put up English and Hebrew videos, we put up at least 3 English and 3 Hebrew videos a week, at least 3 a week of each. So when you see us put up those 6 videos every week, help us on YouTube and on Facebook. Like the videos, favorite the videos, comment, share, mirror. Do whatever you can to promote those videos. It's really, really sacred work. And also help us on our forums and our Facebook pages with good posts and good threads so that people will want to get involved. And remember, every time you post and thread, every time you post or open a thread, it goes into the Google search engine as well. And most of all, our big downfall, as we all know, is financial. It always has been. Help us. And I thank the great JTFers who are helping us, but we need your help more than ever. We always need your help. Checks, money orders, cash donations sent to our post office box make a big difference. Every donation makes a big difference. It helps us. The more we get, the more people we can reach. If there are people who prefer to do it online with their credit card because it's more convenient for them, they can go to the donate button on our Hebrew and English main pages. On the top, there's a donate button. We need your help. We need to be in this fight together because so much is at stake. Okay, and by the way, what will happen with the federal budget they passed? The federal budget that they passed is going to once again increase the size of government, and once again, we see these disastrous policies being enacted. Let's hope and pray that we can do something to wake people up. To wake people up in Israel and to wake people up in America. By the way, as I said many times, I believe if we wake people up in Israel, that automatically will get us tremendous media attention in the United States, and we'll be able to build a mass movement in the United States as well that will support our movement in Israel. So we'll have a mass movement in both countries, and that would be very positive for both countries. God willing. Bezrat Hashem. Amen ken yehi ratzon. Okay, let's get to our questions now from our great JTFers. And we start out with the great wandering samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Deir Chaim, is hell seriously overcrowded? How are Nelson, Arafat, Stalin, Saddam, Osama, Hitler, and the others doing? Are notorious serial killers such as Jeffrey Dahmer, John Wayne Gacy, and Ted Bundy also there as well?" Unquote. Hell, you would think hell is overcrowded because there are billions of people in hell. The majority of people choose evil in the world, unfortunately. Most people choose evil. But hell is a spiritual place, it's not a physical place, so it can't literally get overcrowded because it's not physical, it's all spiritual. And the torment that people suffer there is likely a spiritual torment. We don't know if there may be physical pain associated also. We have no idea. We don't know how those things work. We're not part of the spiritual world, and we're not part of the world to come. We don't know how it works, but we know that evil people are punished and they do suffer tremendous torment. And of course, the notorious serial killers that you mentioned are all burning in hell. And when I say burning in hell, that's also symbolic. We don't know that hell is literally fire burning, or we don't know. We don't know what type of torment it is, but it's a terrible torment, because there is justice against evil people. If evil people do cruel and terrible things to their fellow human beings, God will punish them for that. God will punish people that do terrible and cruel things to their fellow human beings and that live an evil life. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, why did you leave the JDL?" Unquote. Well, I went to prison. I was in prison for 5.5 years because of the bombings that we did against Soviet diplomatic targets. And while I was in prison, unfortunately, other people who claimed to represent JDL, the New York JDL fell apart when I went to prison, and other chapters became dormant. And Irv Rubin, who was an evil person, and who was always against Rabbi Kahan, always against me, always condemned everything we were doing. Irv Rubin, a leftist, by the way, and a self-hating Jew, he took over in Los Angeles, and he claimed to represent the JDL. And that, you know, that ruined the image of what was a sacred, magnificent organization. But it wasn't that I left, it was that I had to go to prison because of what I did for Soviet Jews. And then when I got out of prison, I was not allowed to go back to JDL. I was not allowed to be involved with JDL again, because one of the conditions of my probation, I was on probation for 5 years when I got out of prison, and one of the conditions of my probation was to never to have any association directly or indirectly with JDL. That's why I formed JTF, the Jewish Task Force. That was the alternative that I formed because I was not allowed to have anything to do with JDL. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, according to the first book of Moses, human beings are created in God's image. Can you please explain to us what that means, unquote. Okay, there are numerous explanations. I mean, there's enough ink on this subject among Chazal, the rabbinic sages, to fill 40 or 50 volumes of books, more than that, more than 40 or 50 volumes, to fill hundreds of volumes of books. But one of the main explanations involves free will. Only God and human beings have free will. It's called, in Hebrew, it's called Bechira Chofshit. Bechira Chofshit means free will. Only God and human beings have free will, have the power to choose between good and evil. Angels, for instance, don't have free will. The angels of God automatically do whatever God tells them to do. They are automatic loyal servants of God. They don't have the free will. They have no Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara means evil inclination, because human beings have what's called the evil inclination, the good inclination. Yetzer Hara, Yetzer HaTov, the good inclination, the evil inclination. Angels don't have that. Angels only do what God tells them to do and automatically fulfill all of God's commandments. And animals also don't have free will. Animals live by instinct. Animals cannot go against their instincts. Human beings can go against their instincts. Human beings can rise above nature and rise above their instincts to greatness. Animals are not capable of doing that. So human beings have free will just as God has free will. God has complete free will, and so do human beings. God created in His image. He created a group of beings who have that characteristic of free will, the ability to choose by themselves what course they're going to take. If they choose the good course, of course, eventually they'll be rewarded. If they choose the bad course, eventually they'll be punished. But that's the great test for human beings in this world. And in order for them to be tested, they have to be given true, real free will. And God gave human beings true, real free will. And in that respect, we were created in God's image because God also has free will. Thank you, Da Vinci. And now we go to our great friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, a Jewish acquaintance said that Jews don't believe in hell. I always thought we did, unquote. Well, we certainly do believe in reward and punishment. It's part of the 13 principles of Harambam. Harambam is Maimonides. We believe that God does reward people who do good, and God does punish people who do evil. There's no question that there is reward and punishment. In the next world, in fact, on Yom HaDin, on the Day of Judgment, there is judgment of Midah Keneged Midah. Midah Keneged Midah means measure for measure. Every good thing we did is measured up, is measured right to the last detail, and every bad thing we did is measured to the last detail, and we're given, and we are judged on the basis of our actions. In Judaism, actions speak louder than words. It's your act. You can say and claim, I believe and I want and please forgive me, and you can do whatever you want, but in Judaism, actions speak louder than words. Your actions are what will decide. Your intentions also play a role. Your intentions do play a role, but the most important element of what you're going to be judged by are your actions. What did you do to make this a better world, or what did you do to make this a worse world, God forbid? Now, evil people are punished. Whether you want to call it hell or Gehenom, Sheol just means the grave, basically. So it doesn't mean the hell that people are probably thinking of. But if you want to use the term Gehenom in Hebrew for hell, you know, Jews do believe that there is a place of punishment. Exactly how that punishment is carried out, we don't know. But we know that it exists. Because God is a God of mercy, but He's also a God of justice. And justice demands that the evil pay when they do evil things. So there's definitely punishment And people who do evil will definitely face a punishment. Exactly how that is played out, we don't know, but we know that it exists. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, "How would Kahanism punish Israeli sluts that miscegenate with African illegals?" Unquote. Well, obviously, you know, the Kahanist platform is that it should be against the law to engage in those types of acts. And it will be against the law if we take power. The African illegals obviously are not going to be there anymore if we take power. They're going to be thrown out of the country. We're just going to pick them up and deport all of them very, very, very brutally to make sure that the word gets back in Africa that it doesn't pay to try to sneak into Israel, because these Jews are crazy. I want them to. By the way, people say we're crazy. People said I was crazy when I was running the JDL and we were throwing bombs around. And you know something? That's not necessarily a bad thing. I said at the time, crazy Jews live longer. And it's true. When you're crazy, nobody wants to mess with you. I wanted the Soviets to think that I'm crazy. Because the crazier the Soviets thought if they thought I was really crazy, I'm capable of putting a bomb in the Soviet mission and blowing up all their diplomats, which would have caused a catastrophe in terms of Soviet-American relations. Soviet-American relations would never have recovered if that happened. It would have been devastating to Soviet interests. And so I wanted them to think that I'm capable of doing something as crazy as that. I wanted them to think I'm completely crazy, that I'm completely out of control. And so, you know, if the Africans and others who try to sneak into Israel, they think, oh, this new Jewish government, they're really crazy. They're not going to put up with anything. That's a healthy thing for them to think that. I mean, of course. And of course, the truth is we're not crazy. The truth is it's the so-called sane people who allow policies of self-destruction and policies of masochism and policies of self-hatred. They're the really crazy ones. Those who do what has to be done for survival, who are courageous and who do what has to be done for survival, are the only sane people. But we would make sure that the African illegals are thrown out of the country, all of them, very, very quickly and without any concern for whether or not they're going to complain that it's racist or this or that. Out. And if they're Israelis that cooperate with them or that assist them, those Israelis are going to face the full weight of the law. I don't know how far we're going to be able to go legally because, you know, we're not in power. But we certainly will try to apply the full weight of the law against anyone who in any way cooperates with illegal invaders in the land of Israel. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, "Who's most evil, Lewinsky, Le Pig, Tzipi Hitler, or Israeli prune face?" Okay, let me translate that. Lewinsky so you're asking who is most evil, Netanyahu, Lapid, Tzipi Livni, or Lieberman? Who's most evil among them? They're all very bad. Those are all very bad political leaders who have done terrible damage to the Jewish people. I would say probably the most evil are Tzipi Livni and Yair Lapid. But the ones that actually do the most damage are actually Netanyahu and Lieberman. They do the most damage because people foolishly think that they're so-called right-wingers, and of course they're not. People foolishly think that. They think the Likud is right-wing. They think Lieberman is right-wing. I mean, both of them advocate suicidal policies and end up doing terrible things. But because people foolishly think that they're somewhat on the right, which is completely untrue. They're not even, their policies are horrific. Because people foolishly think that, I think that Netanyahu and Lieberman are the most dangerous in the group that you're mentioning here. Even though they're not the most evil. I mean, technically, if you're judging on a personal level, who's the most evil? Tzipi Livni and Yair Lapid are the most evil. But if you're judging who's the most dangerous, Netanyahu and Lieberman are actually the most dangerous. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "If transfer isn't currently a viable solution, should there be different ways to limit Arab population growth? Should women be encouraged to work?" Unquote. Transfer is the only viable solution. There is no other solution. Millions of Arabs reproducing, endanger Israel's survival, endanger Israel's Jewish character, endanger Israel demographically, culturally, religiously, economically, spiritually, in every respect. You cannot have a situation like this continue. It is the only viable solution. Arab women should not be encouraged to work. Absolutely not. If you put Arabs in the economy and give them more salaries and give them more money, that will be, then you're guaranteeing that they'll stay in Israel. We want to make them as uncomfortable and as unemployed as possible. We want to worsen their economic status as much as possible so that they'll want to leave, and that they and when we offer them compensation to leave, then they'll want to leave. Tens of thousands of Arabs leave on their own. Tens of thousands do leave on their own. This should be encouraged. Putting Arab women in the workforce, God forbid, number one, puts more money in the pockets of the Arab families so that they can have more children and that they want to, and then they want to stay in Israel. That also encourages other Arabs to come flooding into Israel and other third world people, because they say, oh, look at this. See, even our women will go to work and we'll have more money. That's the worst thing you can do. Appeasement never works. That's appeasement. That never works. And putting Arab women in the workforce also does something else. It leads to intermarriage, and it leads to assimilation and the breakdown in Jewish values. Jewish men then are going to sleep with these Arab women. And some of them will marry these Arab women, God forbid. That will inevitably happen if you put Arab women in the workplace. That will inevitably happen. If you think, well, why would they do that? Jewish women are prettier and are nicer. That's all true. In my opinion, that's true. But a lot of Jews are nuts. Look at all the Jewish women that are going with Africans now. I mean, so, you know, a lot of Jews are nuts. We don't want, even if our fellow Jews are nuts, we don't want to encourage them to do bad things. Arab women should not be encouraged to work. Arab men shouldn't be encouraged to work. The more unemployed there are, the more poverty there is among the Arabs, the more their economic situation is bad, the better it is, the more it will help us to squeeze them to get out of the land of Israel. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now the great Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, and Dr. Dan, by the way, is the voice of reason, common sense, and logic. Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, one, bad news. They is king and queens, and we is screwed, unquote. Oh, absolutely right, Dr. Dan. Dr. Dan is referring to something, to a story I mentioned last week about kings and queens. There's no question. They've already reached, now they are kings and queens. that's for sure. And now Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, two, your thoughts about diverting water from the Red Sea to the Dead Sea, unquote. I'm completely against any agreement with Muslim Nazi Jordan and with the Arab terrorists from Ramallah. There was an agreement that was signed with the Arab terrorists from the Fatah Terrorist Murderers Organization and with Jordan that it essentially says, oh, they own the Red Sea and they own the Dead Sea. We all own like a third of it, so we've got to make agreements with them. Well, what are we talking about? The land of Israel. They own nothing. They have no right to anything. All the diversion here is going to, who's going to be doing the diverting here? If there's any diversion of water from the Red Sea to the Dead Sea, which scientists are going to be doing this? The Arab scientists from Ramallah? Are you kidding? Arab scientists with an IQ of 20? They're going to be doing this? Arab scientists who have an IQ lower than their camels? Or the Jordanian scientists? Are you kidding? The only people that will do the diverting are Jewish scientists with Jewish brains. They're going to be doing all this work, and then we give over, then we end up giving all of it to the Arabs. That's the worst thing we could do. Of course, if Israel fully controls everything and we have to divert water in order to preserve the Dead Sea, then we should do it. We're in control, and screw you. You have, screw the Arab terrorists in Ramallah. You have nothing. You have nothing to say about this, and Jordan has nothing to say about this. This is our land. That's what we should say. You wouldn't know how to do this no matter what. You wouldn't know how to do this. You don't know how to do, you know how to do a complex project like diversion of water over land and diversion of water and massive project like this without the whole thing blowing up in your face? Are you kidding? The only people capable of doing this are the Israeli Jews in the Middle East. If the Arabs ever had a project like this, they would, and like in Saudi Arabia, other places when they have projects like this, the Arabs themselves never do any of this. They hire infidels from Europe and America, and all the Christian infidels come in and they do it for them. The Arabs never do this on their own. So, the answer is, this project and this is bad because Israel made a deal that again says that the land of Israel doesn't belong to us. That's bad. The land of Israel belongs to us. Once we have control of the land, we can do whatever we want to do with the water or any other need that we have. And then it might make sense. But only once it's very clear that we control the land. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to our great friend, Hey Nelson, do you need AC? Guess what? You won't get one. Who writes, and I quote, in Judaism, why are Jews not allowed to initiate divorce, but men can? Unquote. Actually, that's not true. That is not true. Women can initiate divorce, which is called a get in Judaism. The husband must agree to it, though, for it to be finalized. But, I don't know if you're aware of this, when a husband initiates divorce, the wife must agree to it in order for it to be finalized as well. That's something that the people who are knocking Judaism never tell you. Rabbeinu Gershom Meor HaGola issued an edict, and all of the Ashkenazi Jews, who are the majority of world Jewry, are required to go by his edict, in which he banned polygamy. He said that Jewish men can only have one wife. And he also said that divorce without the consent of the wife is not permitted. The wife must consent if there's going to be divorce. Now, it's true that this is binding on Ashkenazi Jews, but also because it's the law in Israel, you know, the law in Israel agrees with this. And Dina de Malchuta Dina, which means in Aramaic, the law of the land is the law, so Sephardic Jews are also bound by this now because it's also become Israeli secular law, so Sephardic Jews are also bound by it, according to halacha. So the fact is, divorce can be initiated either by men or women, and it cannot be completed until it has the consent of both parties. That is Judaism. Both parties must consent to divorce. And now, Hey Nelson writes, and I quote, why do husbands take child custody after... Oh, by the way, let me just add another thing, by the way. You know that the husband has to have a halachically justified reason to pursue divorce. Nowadays, if one party really wants it, the court will usually put heavy pressure on the second party to accept it and grant the divorce, because it's generally accepted that if one party really wants to get out of a marriage, it doesn't make sense to force them to stay in a marriage. So in most cases, the court will heavily pressure the second party to agree to a divorce. But technically, under halachic law, you're supposed to have consent of both parties for a divorce. Doesn't matter if it's the man, the woman, the wife, husband. You're supposed to have consent of both parties. Now, if a man refuses the divorce, refuses to divorce his wife, refuses to give her a get, the Torah, which is possible, a man can refuse to sign the document and consent. Do you know that according to the Torah, a man can be physically beaten until he agrees to give her a get? If a woman wants to get a divorce and the man says, no, I'm not going to divorce you, too bad, you have to stay married to me. And I don't care what the rabbi's saying, I don't care what the court says. Do you know that that man can be physically beaten until he agrees to give the woman a divorce and set her free? That's Jewish law. Now, the problem we have today is that secular law doesn't allow us to beat him, and so there are some husbands that refuse to give the divorce to the woman, and then the woman can't remarry, and so she's stuck and she's like a prisoner. That's the problem we have. That's what we call agunot. We have agunot, people that are pretty much bound and imprisoned in a marriage they don't want to be in because their husbands refuse to consent. And the reason we have that problem is because secular law doesn't allow us to beat the guy. I mean, that, you know, if not for secular law, this wouldn't be a problem. 99% of the time, believe me, If these guys knew they were going to get a beating, 99% of the time, they would immediately consent to it. There may be a few exceptions, very few exceptions. But 99% of the time, the problem would be solved. But secular law doesn't allow us to touch him. And that's why we have the problem, because Torah law is not the law of the land. If we had Torah law, we wouldn't have this problem. And women would have their right to be free and liberated from a situation like this. Okay. Now, Hay Nelson writes, and I quote, why do husbands take child custody after divorce, unquote. Not true. That's not true. In most cases, the mother takes the custody of the children, in most cases. That's not true. The husband has to support the children after the divorce, naturally. But it's not true that the wife, that the husband takes custody of the children after the, it's just not true. I don't even know where you're getting it. This is the first time I've heard someone make this particular claim, but it's just not true. And now Hay Nelson writes, and I quote, please discuss the differences of treatment of women in Judaism and Islam, unquote. The differences are like night and day. In Judaism, women are revered. Women are adored in Judaism. Miriam, the older sister of Moshe Rabbeinu and Aharon, of Moses and Aaron, saved the Jewish people because her father, Amram, the father of Moses and Aaron and Miriam, was Amram. He was the leader of the Jewish people in Egypt. And Pharaoh ruled that all the male babies have to be killed. When Pharaoh made this ruling, Amram left his wife. And he divorced his wife. He left his wife. He was going to encourage all the Jewish men to leave their wives and not to have children anymore. He said, why should we bring children into a world where they're just going to be murdered by Pharaoh? We're not going to bring children into the world. And Miriam, the older sister of Moses, Moses hadn't been born yet, Moses hadn't come into the world yet, but Miriam, his older sister, who was just a girl at the time, she went to her father and said, you have to change your decision because the Jewish people will not survive if you do this. Pharaoh will come and go. Bad leaders and bad rulers who threaten to kill us and destroy us will come and go. We'll survive as a people. But if we destroy ourselves, that's something that we cannot survive. And she convinced him. She convinced him to return to his wife. And eventually they had Moshe and Aharon. They had her two younger brothers, Moshe and Aharon, Moses and Aaron. And of course, the Jews following this leader, who was a great spiritual leader in Egypt, they went back to their wives. And so the Jewish people continued. And in fact, God blessed the Jewish people and gave them even more babies. But Miriam and righteous women in Egypt, they saved the Jewish people from destruction. And we see this happening over and over again. We saw the Jewish midwives when Pharaoh ordered them to kill the firstborn. The Jewish midwives defied Pharaoh, facing death. They refused to kill the firstborn. They defied Pharaoh. They were risking death. And because of the courage of these Jewish women, God decided to save the Jews in the land of Egypt. This is one of the reasons why God saved the Jews in the land of Egypt. It was one of the reasons. And then we see in Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. Women did not sin in that sin. Women were not part of the sin of the golden calf. Only the men were. And then we see in Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies, who went into the land of Israel and said, oh, we can't conquer the land. These people are like giants and we're like grasshoppers and we can never conquer the land. It was the men who were guilty in the sin of the spies in Chet HaMeraglim. The women did not participate in that sin either. And so we are taught as part of Jewish tradition that we were freed, that we were saved as a people because of our women, and that we were freed from bondage because of our women. And that in the terrible sins in the Sinai Desert, the men were guilty and the women were not. Women are revered and glorified in Judaism. Now, when you compare that to Islam, where women are treated like cattle and worse than cattle, and where it says, and where in Islam it says that the women are all going to hell because they're always complaining. I mean, the hatred and contempt for women. and the fact that many cases of rape are justified and accepted in Islam. I mean, just the whole thing and the barbaric treatment of women is just beyond description. Judaism and Islam are polar opposites when it comes to the treatment of women. Judaism reveres women. Islam despises women. Thank you, Hey Nelson. And now we go to our great friend Christians for Jews, who writes, and I quote, "What did you think of Larry the caller in your great Nelson Mandela interview?" Unquote. Oh, Larry was fantastic. Larry from Kansas. He was obviously a Bible believing evangelical Christian. Just a great guy. And you know, so normal. The Jews should learn something from this. Look how normal he was. Look how, if anything, he even slightly criticized me from the right. He felt I wasn't even right-wing enough. And I think by Jewish standards, I was super right-wing in that interview with Nelson Mandela. I mean, how refreshing it is to hear somebody like Larry. How refreshing it is. I thought he was fantastic. And I think if you see on our forum, everybody loved him on the forum as well. He was just great. Thank you, Christians for Jews. And now we go to the great Guns N' Roses fan who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, can you tell us about Yeshayahu Leibovitz?" Unquote. Yeshayahu Leibovitz, Yemach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshayim Yirkav. What an evil, rotten piece of garbage. And how the self-hating Israeli establishment, the Erev Rav in Israel, they love him. This was a professor who spoke about a so-called type of Judaism that he was preaching, where he was again, by the way, he didn't believe in the world to come. He didn't believe in the rabbis. He didn't believe in the Talmud. He didn't believe in most of the Talmud. He rejected. He rejected everything. You know, he knew better than everybody. And he said that he compared the state of Israel to Nazi Germany. He called them Judeo-Nazis. He called the Israeli soldiers Judeo-Nazis. Now, if he had said that when they were throwing Jews out of their homes in Gush Katif, there might have been something to that. But he actually said that the Jews were acting like Nazis toward the Arabs. Toward the Arabs. The Arabs, the Arab Muslim Nazis who promised to exterminate the Jewish people. And he's accusing the Jews of being the Nazis in this conflict. The whole Arab world said, "We're going to push you into the sea. We're going to exterminate you. We're going to finish Hitler's job." The whole Arab world has been promising us this for over 100 years. And this disgusting, unbelievably ugly, by the way, unbelievably ugly person, physically ugly, spiritually ugly, mentally ugly, this disgusting creature, this cockroach, called the Jews the Nazis in a situation like that? The Jews are the Nazis for surviving. And by the way, the Jewish reaction to the Arabs has been unbelievably wimpy and pathetic and appeasing. If anything, the Jews should have reacted 1,000 times stronger against the Arabs. 1,000 times stronger. And the pathetic, wimpy, appeasing Jews, he says even that he compares to the Nazis and defends the Arab Muslims, the real Nazis, the Arab Muslims that want to push the Jews into the sea. You can't get more anti-Semitic and more evil than this creature. He is a true Judo-Nazi. He really is a Judo-Nazi because he defends the Nazi murderers of Jews and he wants to destroy his fellow Jews and did everything he could to undermine the state of Israel, the land of Israel, the people of Israel, and the religion of Israel, the Torah of Israel. So he is what he called all the Israeli, he said the Israeli Jews are Judo-Nazis. He is a true Judeo-Nazi. And so that's what I think of him. Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshayim Yirkav. May his name and memory be obliterated. And now Guns N' Roses fan writes, and I quote him, "Please talk about Parashat HaShavua. Todah Rabah." Okay. The Torah portion. Guns N' Roses fans wants me to speak about the Torah portion, which was Parashat Vayechi. Vayechi is the final parasha in Sefer Bereshit, where Yaakov Avinu separates, he's about to pass into the next world, he's about to leave this world, he's about to pass away. And so he wants to bless and make predictions and speak to his 12 sons and his grandchildren before he leaves this world. Let's see, what aspect of that should I speak about? This, oh, that's such a fantastic, like all the parashiyot, it's such a fantastic parasha. You know what I'll speak about? I'm going to speak about the very beginning of it. Yaakov, by the way, is Jacob in Hebrew. I should have mentioned, I really have to do more translating when I speak. Yaakov takes his son Yosef in this parasha and makes his son Joseph, Yaakov makes Yosef swear that Yaakov will be buried in Eretz Yisrael. He says, I do not want to be buried in Egypt. I want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Swear to me that you're going to bury me in Eretz Yisrael, he says to his son. And he makes his son swear. And his son does swear. And if you recall, at that time, Yosef was the viceroy of Egypt. He was almost like the king. He was second only to Pharaoh. He made him swear. Now, the first question is, why would he ask him to swear? What does he think? Yosef is going to lie to him? If Yosef promises him, Yosef wouldn't keep his word. The answer is, Yaakov knew that Paro, that Pharaoh, and all of Egypt would oppose allowing Yaakov to be buried in the land of Israel. They would oppose taking Yaakov's body out of Egypt and bringing him to the land of Israel. He knew that Pharaoh would be against it and that all of Egypt would be against it. Why? Because when Yaakov arrived in Egypt, the famine that was in Egypt, there was a great famine in Egypt. Ra'av. It was a long period of Ra'av in Egypt. Famine. And as soon as Yaakov arrived, the famine ended. Immediately the famine ended. And Egypt no longer had any famine. And Egypt was plentiful again in terms of food and everything else was plentiful. So Jacob was like a magical figure to Egyptians. They thought, wow, look at this. He comes here and the famine automatically ends. He was like a magical figure to them. And so Yaakov feared that they would turn him into a god and they would start worshiping him. That if he was buried in Egypt, they were going to come to his grave and start worshiping him and then they would turn him into a god. That's what he was concerned about. And so to avoid that situation, because if he had been silent and allowed something like that to happen, he also would have been punished. If he had allowed the encouragement of Avodah Zarah, of idol worship, which, by the way, it wouldn't have only been among the Egyptians. The Hebrew slaves were very heavily influenced by the Egyptians as well. So some of them also would have started to worship him, and this would have been a disaster. So he said, you must take my body out. You must swear to me that you're going to take me out and bury me in the land of Israel. And his son Yosef did swear, and he kept his word, and Yaakov Avinu was buried, in fact, in Meirat HaMachpelah, together with the other fathers of the Jewish people, with Avraham and Yitzchak. Avraham, his grandfather, and Yitzchak, his father. They're all buried in Meirat HaMachpelah. Thank you, Guns N' Roses, for the great questions. Thank you so much. And now we go to the great Nekama, who writes, and I quote, I thought some apes were capable of learning sign language. So what happened at the funeral of Mandela, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro? Okay. Where is Jane Goodall? Please comment. Okay. What Nekama's referring to, we just did a video on this, actually, on the sign language translator who was faking it, who was just faking the sign language. I mean, this is typical. This is what happens in African countries. This is what Africa is all about. You know, you want sign language? Okay, I'll do sign language. And he pretends to be doing sign language. It was nothing. It was all, there was no sign language there. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And Barack Hussein Obama speaking and he's standing next to him pretending to do the sign language. I mean, this just, and you know what's amazing about this? The same thing occurred. The same guy did the same thing at a speech for the president of South Africa last year. The president of South Africa gave a speech last year. He did the same thing last year. And even after he already did this, and after he was arrested for murder, in the past he's been arrested for murder and violent crimes, they let him continue to be the sign language translator? Talk about the wonders of affirmative action. I mean, as we said in our video, this guy is perfect, the perfect guy to be the chief technician at the Obamacare website. He is perfect for this. I mean, his history and what he did with the sign language, this is perfect for the Obamacare website. He should be in charge. He should be in charge of everything on the Obamacare website. And Nick Amar writes, where is Jane Goodall? Jane Goodall she's the world's number one expert on chimpanzees. So she's obviously very familiar with affirmative action. Thank you so much, Nekama. And now we go to our good friend DGR81, who writes, and I quote, Der Chaim, what do you think of? And there's a link here to, oh, this is a terrible group. This is a terrible group. This group is absolutely horrible. International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. What a ripoff. What a farce. What a fraud this guy is. He is such a fraud. What a fraud. He claims that he's raising money among Christians to help poor Jews in Israel, to give money to poor Jews. Yeah, sure. First of all, you don't give handouts to poor Jews in Israel. Okay, you give them jobs and economic opportunities and change the state of Israel. That he wouldn't do. But anyway, putting that aside, just to show what a complete and evil fraud he is, he calls himself a Rabbi Eckstein. Okay, he's not a rabbi, he's a fraud. This complete fraud is endorsed. Look who he's endorsed by. He's endorsed, let me go to the page here. Let me see here. Endorsed by, let's see who backs him. Ah, endorsements. Here we go, endorsements, I knew it. Endorsements, okay. Let's see, Israeli leaders. The very first, Shimon Peres is the first guy who says how great this organization is. Now, if Shimon Peres endorses the organization, stay away from it like it's radioactive. There is no traitor worse than Shimon Peres. I hope Shimon Peres joins Nelson Mandela very soon in a very warm place. Oh, we'll really be celebrating when Shimon Peres croaks. Then Benjamin Netanyahu, of course, endorses it. Roni Bar-On, another one. They call him the interior minister. He hasn't been interior minister in years. Okay, so this isn't the... Yahud Barak. Okay, he endorses it, naturally. The guy who offered Arafat 97% of Judea and Samaria and 50% of Jerusalem. He endorsed. He wanted to give 50% of Jerusalem to Arafat. Yeah. Thank God Arafat rejected it. He endorses the group. He says it's a great group. He writes a thing here saying how wonderful the group is. Ariel Sharon endorses it, saying it's encouraging interfaith dialogue. Ariel Sharon. Yimash Movazichro. And Daniel Ayalon, another traitor who was the ambassador to the United States. What a fake, phony fraud that is. Let's see U.S. leaders who the endorsers are of this group. Joe Lieberman is the very first one. Joe Lieberman. Oh, what a piece of garbage. Joe Lieberman says it's a wonderful, he loves this group. He thinks it's so wonderful, this group, Joe Lieberman. And this is a good friend of his, Eckstein. He's a very good friend of Joe Lieberman's. Yeah, Joe Lieberman, who said that he would invite Farrakhan to the White House. He wanted to meet with Farrakhan and wanted to invite him to the White House. Remember when Lieberman was the Democrat candidate for vice president in the year 2000? He was Al Gore's running mate in the year 2000. He said the first thing he'd do as president is invite Farrakhan to the White House and meet with Farrakhan. And he said, Arafat is my friend. He said on the Larry King show. He said, oh, Arafat is my good friend. That's who endorses this. That's who endorses this. Oh, please. Tom Lantos, another one. He's the Holocaust survivor that supported Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Obama and all of the enemies of Israel, but he's a Holocaust survivor and he's a congressman. Oh, please. The worst. The worst. It doesn't get any worse than this. What a ripoff. If Christians want to help the state of Israel, they should give to JTF. Jewish Task Force, JTF. That's the group they should support. Thank you, DGR. And now we go to Jim Draper, who is relatively new on the forum. Welcome to our forum, Jim. Jim writes, and I quote, "What makes Torah so important? Answer, it is alive and sharper than any two-edged swords, piercing as far as the marrow," unquote. Thank you very much. Very, very true. Very, very true. And the double-edged sword and all these, of course, are all quotes. And thank you, Jim. Very, very good points. And again, welcome to our forum. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "If Mike Huckabee decides to enter the 2016 presidential race, who would you support in the Republican primary, Huckabee or Ted Cruz?" Unquote. Ted Cruz. I love Mike Huckabee because Mike Huckabee is a genuine supporter of Israel. And you know that when you have a true friend of the Jewish people and of Israel like Mike Huckabee, you know that I love true friends of Israel. And he really is a true friend of Israel. This is a guy who went to Israel 19 times, who says there's no Palestinian people, who said Israel shouldn't give up any land, who says we should move as many Jews as possible into Judea and Samaria, who supports as much settlement as possible. I mean, he is so good on Israel. He's just fantastic on Israel. Unfortunately, though, I don't think he could win the nomination. I think his time to run was in 2012. We wanted him to run. We encouraged him to run. We did videos urging him to run, and he didn't. I think it was a mistake. That was his time when he had a chance. And unfortunately, also on some of the other issues, he doesn't have the positions that we like. He was not a good governor of Arkansas. You know, he increased taxes, increased spending as governor of Arkansas. And his positions on amnesty were also pretty bad when he was governor of Arkansas. So he's taken some positions that I'm not happy with at all. He's also attacking the Tea Party. And we don't like his positions on these issues. And we want someone who's consistently conservative across the board. We want someone who's conservative on Israel. We want someone who's conservative on the issues that are important to America, that are important to everybody. We want someone who's consistent. We can trust somebody who's consistent on all the issues. We can trust them far more. And Ted Cruz is that person. I'm not saying that, you know, that it's impossible that we won't eventually change, if Ted Cruz doesn't win. We'll have to see what we do at that point. But right now, our candidate is Ted Cruz. Thank you, EB. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Other than his leftist views, what do you think of Arik Einstein's music?" Unquote. I think Arik Einstein was a talented musician. I think he wrote very original, creative music. He was very creative. He was a brilliant writer, and he was talented. I was never a big fan of his because I cannot separate my political views from my taste in music or anything else. I just can't. I don't do that. So I was never a fan, maybe because I didn't like his left leanings. He was never one of these militant leftists that was out at demonstrations all the time. You know, he wasn't one of these obnoxious ones. But he did occasionally go toward the left, and that turns me off. And, you know, so I was never a fan of his, but he was a talented musician. He was a talented musician. Binyamin now writes, and I quote, "Is African worship of Mandela why it snowed in Egypt over the pyramids?" Unquote. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think the snow over Egypt over the pyramids had anything to do with Egypt. I think that God was, if anything, God was sending a message to Israel because it snowed in Israel. That same storm buried Jerusalem in over a foot of snow, which Israel hasn't seen a snowstorm like that in 93 years. No, I don't think it had anything to do with that. I think, and not only that, Egypt's sins are much worse than Mandela. Egypt doesn't worship Mandela. The Arabs hate black people. Arabs think black people are monkeys. The Arabs hate black people. The Arabs have black people as slaves. You know, the Arabs hate everybody who's not an Arab. Arabs hate anyone who's not an Arab, and they hate anyone who's not a Muslim. The reason that they claim to like Mandela so much is because he was so anti-Israel and so anti-Jewish, so they used him. They used him to fight against Israel, to try to destroy Israel. But among Egypt's sins, you know, I think the fact that they want to literally exterminate Israel and the Jewish people, I would think would be number one on the list. I mean, that's by far the most serious sin, and they're going to get more than a snowstorm for that someday. God willing. Bimeherabi amenu, amen, ken yehiratzon. It should happen speedily in our days. Amen. Amen. So should it be. Thank you, Binyamin. And now we go to our great friend Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, Italian-American YouTube user propaganda buster defends the Japanese against Sea Shepherd and other similar groups. What's your opinion of this? Unquote. Oh, Sea Shepherd and these other environmental insane groups are horrible, evil organizations. I agree 100%. I don't know what Propaganda Buster is saying about them. I haven't seen the videos, but I'm 100% against these environmental lunatics. And it's not that I'm, obviously, it's not that I'm against the environment. I mean, I also want to breathe clean air, and I also want to have clean water to drink, and I also want, I mean, I want the environment preserved. But these environmental animals who are puppets of the multinational corporate giants in the media and who are deliberately doing their bidding are making us dependent upon Arab oil and are enabling the Muslim world to do what they're doing. You know, the Muslim world would be put out of business now if not for these environmental groups. We would have developed clean coal. We would have developed all types of energy alternatives. And I'm talking about real energy alternatives, not just the ones that the environmental groups push, like wind and other things that are way into the future. And I'm not against windmills, and I'm in favor of every type of energy that you can develop that will put the Muslim terrorist nations out of business. But we should be drilling for oil in America, and we should be fracking, and we should be doing shale oil, and we should be developing clean coal and doing whatever we can to put the Arab Muslim Nazi nations and the Muslim Nazis and the Muslim nations in general out of business, because oil is the only thing that sustains them. That's the only thing they have. And these so-called environmental groups have done terrible damage and have made us devastatingly dependent, unnaturally and artificially dependent upon these evil Muslim terrorist countries. And so these this is an organization, by the way, Sea Shepherd, that engages in violent and illegal and terrorist attacks. They should be tried as terrorists and put in jail, and the key should be thrown away. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to the great Mishmat, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, why is it that blacks, generally speaking, vote uniformly Democrat? Leftist policies have been detrimental to their community, unquote. That is very true, but they think that, you know, because they've been convinced that handouts and giving them government programs and keeping them dependent upon government is good for them. That's what they believe, just like the Jews think that foreign aid for Israel is good for Israel when it's terrible for Israel. The best thing you can do for anybody is to make them independent. When you make someone independent, and when you make somebody have to achieve on their own and support themselves, that's the best favor you could do for anybody. Look at how the Jews vote against their own best interests. The Jews are the worst in the world when it comes to that. No one is more self-hating in terms of their policies. At least the blacks think that they're voting for something that's good for blacks. Whether it is or it isn't, you can argue about that point. But if you convince blacks that voting Republican is good, believe me, they would all vote good for blacks. If you convince them that it's good for blacks to vote Republican, they're going to vote for Republicans. If you convince them it's good for blacks to vote Democrat, they're going to vote for Democrats. By the way, the blacks were Republican until the 1930s because of Abraham Lincoln and because of what happened with the South and what happened after slavery and everything. The blacks used to vote Republican in this country for many years. Then with Roosevelt and the Great Depression and all the government handouts and All the programs that he initiated, welfare and all the other programs he initiated, they turned Democrat. But if you convince black people that it's good to vote, that it's good for their community to vote one way or another, they will vote for what's good for their community. The one group that never votes in their own self-interest are the Jews. That's the one group that never does. They are the sickest group of them all. If you tell Jews it's bad for Jews to support Obama, it's bad for Israel to support Obama, even though they know that's true, they'll still vote for Obama. So, in my opinion, I wish Jews had the same attitude about voting and about self-interest that blacks have. That wouldn't only be good for the Jews, it'd be good for the world. I wish. Because what's good for Israel and good for the Jews happens to be good for the world. It just so happens God set things up that way. Thank you, Mishmat. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, last week I meant to ask, do you think the current effort by the IDF to recruit women is an effort to replace Dati men in the army?" Unquote. Oh, now I understand your question. Okay. Probably, yes. They will do anything they can to try to de-Judaize the Jewish people. And because there are a lot of religious soldiers now, because Israel's population, especially Israel's youthful population, is becoming more and more religious because the religious have a lot of babies. They will do anything they can to de-Judaize the army, the police, everything. That's their goal. That's what the Erev Rav that rules over Israel wants to do, unfortunately. As the Vilna Gaon taught us, the number one enemy of the Jewish people in the period before the coming of the Mashiach, the number one enemy will not be our enemy from our external enemies, but our internal enemy, the Erev Rav. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And let me see, where am I now? Here we go. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.